You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.
You're listening to the Toil of Hell radio show. I'm Joe Thrashenkill. With me is 365 Days of Horror. And we have a hell of a show for you today. Like, we say that every week, but this one's actually good. We've got a guest coming up in just a few minutes. I think a lot of you guys are really going to enjoy listening to. This is our second international guest from the far-off land of Italy. So we will do our best to contain ourselves and not say offensive things about his country. That's right, we're going to have Paolo from Hour of Penance on with us. So be sure to stick around for that. 365, how are you doing today?
Doing all right. My dander's a little bit up over the events of the past couple days, but hanging in there. How about yourself?
I actually feel incredibly encouraged by the events of the last couple of days. I had written a post for Flush It Friday about essentially how fascists should be smashed, and by gum, we're working on it. Richard Spencer, a well-known neo-Nazi, got his shit rocked hard live and on camera, and it's become the greatest meme of 2K17. People are remixing it with Hatebreed, with Slayer, with Dead Kennedys, and my favorite, Smash Mouth.
I've watched that video at least maybe 50, 60 times. It's great. As a former boxer, I wish the punch was a little bit better. It was more of a side of the head kind of forearm shiver elbow than square right in the jaw, but I'll take that over nothing.
Yeah, that's fair. And, I got to give him points for getting off cleanly because the camera stayed focused on Richard Spencer. It seems like the Antifa guy just kind of crept away from the crowd.
Well, I think he also had his face covered in a hood up. I don't know if it was Antifa or Black Bloc or just someone who was covered up, but good for them.
Yeah, if you're ever in the Austin area, I'll buy you a beer.
And I like how this spawned like this little discussion of people trying to be like, oh, well, they shouldn't hit him. And it's like, yeah, he's a Nazi. You should punch him as much as possible.
Yeah, there's very few occasions where violence is okay. And thankfully, violence against Nazis is always okay. Like, always. I mentioned it before. Our grandfathers got medals for that kind of thing. So also in the news, you sent me the greatest press release I think I've ever seen in my life. Your exact words were, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, we have to talk about this.
Verbatim. He's not exaggerating.
I'm
That's
quoting
exactly
that,
what I wrote.
Yes. The pull quote here that, the lead, if you will, backwards with a Z, are essentially the libertarian rage against the machine. And good Lord, that's a combo I was not prepared for. Please tell us more about backwards.
Well, you know they mean business when they have a Z in their name. I think that's worth pointing out. So, being on the show and working for the site, I'm on some press lists, and we got this email sent to us talking about backwards, who are going to be on our best friend Chris Franz, a.k.a. Franzilla, from Attila. They're on his label, I think Stay Sick Recordings it's called, and their first single is called Self-Ownership.
Ah, sweet. That's, when I'm rapping and rocking with my boys, we love to talk about individual responsibility.
Their vocalist, Eric July, is often seen wearing a hat that just says, taxation is theft.
Yes, I've also seen him wearing a hoodie that has the logo for anarchist capitalism, which if you guys aren't, familiar with fringe politics, that's the stupidest one.
I'm going through their Facebook page, specifically their bio, and if you're really interested, you can go along too. facebook.com/backwardsmusic. They're from Texas, so you have some explaining to do.
Wait, really? I mean, that's not surprising. Alex Jones is from Texas. Branch Davidians are from Texas. Yeah, there's plenty of crazies here, man. They're all over the place. I was watching another video. They had a guest from Escape the Fate, The band most notable for being the former band of Ronnie Radke. So these guys travel in circles that I just wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole.
Their about section just says, pissed off and anti-statism, all real, no fake. Their biography just says, ... hungry for success. And their influences include Nas, Lauryn Hill, Korn, Linkin Park, Blink-182, Further Seems Forever, Emerosa, and Linkin Park.
So I can see the Lauryn Hill influence. She did go to jail for tax evasion, so...
I'm more concerned with putting Linkin Park twice.
I mean, you know, when I think about the greatest bands of all time, it's Linkin Park, Korn, Linkin Park, Blink-182.
I mean, you have a chance to go see these guys. They're playing So What Festival in Texas in March, along with Attila, Amur, After the Burial, Escape the Fate, Icy Stars. A whole bunch of winners are playing this.
I mean, aside from the guys in the band, I would absolutely be the oldest person there.
And I love on their page, they have just live videos of them talking about immigration and border security and liberty. This is just, I don't think I could create a band more annoying, even if I tried.
There is something especially rebellious, though, about, you know, taking the music of youth and the power of rock and roll and rap and, you know, the sounds of the streets, and totally using it to be a bootlicker from billionaires. So they call themselves a part of the New Gent movement. And in addition to, you know, sucking the Koch brothers' dicks, that's all you need to know about these guys.
How long before they tour with All That Remains?
Ooh, good question. I wonder if Phil Abani can overcome his racism long enough to deal with a black person.
Well, he'll convince himself by saying he's one of the good ones.
Yes. Yeah, he will. Well, I am, you know, shocked and horrified to know that this thing exists. So, you know, thanks for sharing that with me.
Yeah. And of course, the music's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, we never, ever, ever talk about these kinds of bands on the site for a good reason, because, you know, they're not good. We'd rather, you know, write about, you know, things that we enjoy. But continuing this, I don't know, new metal kick, you also found a very special shirt stain from a band that, man, has been reviled for so long, I think they've been completely forgotten. How about you share that with us?
Yeah, Amur, our good buddy Frankie Palmieri's band Amur, has once again released a shirt that people are going to say controversial, and controversial isn't the right word, because there shouldn't be a controversy over this, because it is bad, it is wrong, it is repugnant. It is a color-changing shirt that shows a picture of a woman, and when the color changes, it looks like she's been bloodied and beaten up and is covered in bruises. And this is the t-shirt for the band.
See, in a more intelligent person's hands, in a more intelligent band's hands, they could easily make that a statement about domestic violence that is actually meaningful. In the hands of Frankie P, it's just clumsy and stupid and actually misogynistic.
And he actually tried to explain it and made even less sense. He said the face on the shirt depicts a victim of drug abuse. And I'll just read a quote from Frankie. "Look at yourself is about all the mistakes in my life, even though it's a picture of a woman, or things that I've had to figure out the hard way. It's about self-examination and really just taking a good, long, hard look at myself and exposing those parts of me and also exposing other parts of other people. The shirt design is in no way endorsing nor portraying domestic violence. The art was not meant to depict a beaten woman, but a person with drug-related issues. It was meant to portray a person who ignores all of their problems in life, someone who can look in the mirror and not see the issues they truly have. That was the whole basis of the product title, Reflection."
Nothing about that makes sense.
Nope.
Nowhere in your long, meandering explanation did it begin to make sense. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
The cognitive dissonance is just utterly impressive, especially considering when you think back a couple years ago when he had his now discontinued Cold Soul line of merchandise that had like depictions of Columbine and other like stuff from American History X, and those were like his t-shirts. So I'm beginning to think he has a problem.
I think he's an edgelord who's trying to make it make sense, and it just doesn't, because he's not terribly bright.
Now, this is coming from the guy who wrote lyrics that said, "I want to see you suck his dick." So, there you go.
I'm probably the worst fuck you've ever had.
Get off me, you've made your point.
Frankie P., we never change. Never, ever change.
Feel free to come on the show anytime you want, Frankie.
Hey, I'm sure he doesn't really have a whole lot going on. He tweets and then immediately apologizes to Metal Injection. We have got a very special guest on the show today. You come for the banter, you stay for the interviews. This is a good one. Please welcome Paolo from Hour of Penance. Awesome. Today on the show, we've got Paolo from Hour of Penance. He plays guitars and also does vocals, and he's really, really good at both of them. Thanks for joining thanks for joining us on the show today.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, I was, you know, I've never had a chance to see you guys live before, but I was watching video of you at Obscene Extreme Fest in 2013, and it kind of blew me away how you were both just shredding the guitar and spitting out a million words a minute while singing. It's one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. When did you hone your ability to do both play guitar and sing together?
I started very early, like when I was 16, because I was in a little town and there's no one who played that metal. So I had to do most thing that I can by myself. So I started first with guitars, and after a little bit I started singing and playing together with a band, with a local band. And then when I came to play in Our Penance, I was starting without playing guitar, because it was really hard just to play only the kind of music. And after 6 months, I had enough experience to sing and play both. And we started to have two guitars on stage, because they only had the one guitars, and most songs were written from two. So I think this got a new layer of sound live that we didn't have before.
I can definitely tell. That's it's very impressive for certain. You know, do you have any plans? You've got this new record coming out at the end of this month. It's called Cast the First Stone. Do you have any plans to do a North American tour? I see that you've got some dates coming up in Europe.
Right now, we don't have any plans, because over time, it became increasingly difficult to play there for us. Visa is much more difficult than in the past. We had 6 months just to get a visa. And most of the time, you get your date, your gigs just a couple months before. And when you apply for a visa, you need to tell where you're going to play, where we are going to be. And most of the time, we don't have enough time to apply for visa and just tell the immigration where we are going to be. So the last couple of tours, we had planned to be in the North America, but in the end, we couldn't do a visa. And for the future, I don't know. Right now, we don't have any plans. But maybe if you get good offers in time, it will be great to be there.
Yeah. Let's see. There was a tour set in 2014 with Flesh God Apocalypse, and you had those aforementioned visa issues there. Did you do the tour in 2012 in the U.S. with the Black Dahlia Murder?
Yeah, we did the one with Black Dahlia Murder. And another one in the same year with Cannibal Corpse.
Oh, that is excellent. So you've got the chance to at least come through and see a lot of the country. What were some of your favorite spots on the road here in the U.S.?
Well, with Cannibal Corpse was a bit of small town shows in the East Coast, and were small venues but always very packed, and was quite fun to be there. While with Black Dahlia Murder, there was always great shows with a lot of people, and especially big towns like Los Angeles was really great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. On this record, I noticed that the artwork is done by, and I'm going to butcher this name, I apologize, Yula Havenschak. Is that the correct
name?
Yeah,
it's Eastern Europe guy, they got this kind of weird surnames.
Yeah. So he did the art on Cast the First Stone, as well as Regicide and Sedition, your last two records before this one.
Paradogma 2.
It's incredible. What made you decide to continue working with him versus finding a new artist?
I think he got the right mood for what we are looking for in the artworks. He did always a great job, starting from Paradogma till now. And I don't know, I think he got a trademark for us in the last albums. I don't think there's any reason to try someone else, you know, if it's good, why change?
That's a great point. That's a great point. So maybe just to transition a little bit, I wanted to ask you about your abilities as a guitarist. Basically, how do you guys develop the songwriting duties with the guitar? Is it you writing the riffs yourself, or are you also writing with Julio, or do you guys work together to develop the song structures and riffs?
Julio always takes care of the riffs and the music. I just help him if there's some structures that could get maybe a little different, or maybe some, you know, in the new album we added some keyboards and some little arrangements with guitars, some melodies. But most of the music is done by Julio. And when it wrote the music, I work on the vocals and the metrics.
Got it.
So first, I try to find a vocal line that fits, and then I write the lyrics.
With Cast the First Stone, speaking of the lyrics, there's a lyrical theme that goes throughout the record. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that?
Yeah, most of the lyrics are about the conflict between the West and the East, because since the Crusades, there always been some kind of conflict because of these two different views of the world. And I think in the last three centuries, in the West, we got rid of religion and made clear that reason is what must lead the man, the state, and not religion. And they don't have this kind of difference in Saudi Arabia or other countries, because the Islamic law is also the law of their states. And this kind of thinking is so far from us that in the end always brings conflict. And around this theme, I wanted to develop some kind of lyrics that wanted to make people reflect on this kind of differences and why we should defend our kind of thinking against this kind of fundamentalism.
That's, I guess that's an interesting perspective that you have, because in Europe, I suppose that religion doesn't guide the decisions of lawmakers as much as it does here in the United States, where a fair number, a large number of our politicians feel guided by Southern Baptists or otherwise fundamentalist Christian perspectives.
No, it's different, especially in Italy. We got religious thinking, but it tries to influence the state, but in the end, it doesn't have that much power right now. It had before, but not now. The rest of Europe is more secular. They had the French Revolution, they had Napoleonic Wars, and the religion lost its kind of power to influence the state, the laws, and how people think.
I'm jealous, personally.
I'm curious if you're concerned at all with some of the lyrical themes of this album, of people maybe misinterpreting what you're trying to say and try to use it for possibly some of their own political movements.
Well, I think if people really read the lyrics and understand the themes, it's not something that offends or wants a war against them. Mm-hmm. It's just something that shows what war is, what war brings, and all the atrocities that this kind of conflict could bring to us and to them. So yes, some people are a bit worried about this, but I think it's right to state what we think and not fear telling our ideas just because they are offended by how we treat religion. We don't have this kind of sacrality they have.
It wouldn't be out of line to suggest that you're opposed to all religion.
Actually, religion is fine unless it brings violence. You can believe your own God if your God doesn't tell you to kill everyone else who has a different God. That's the point. And we always spoke about the Christian religion because that's the one that's close to us. But, I mean, it's the same kind of thinking that every monotheistic religion brings. And I think they're all wrong in this kind of dogmatic thinking.
I would be hard-pressed to disagree with you on that. How do you feel about non-religions like Scientology?
yeah. I don't know. I think there's a lot of people need to believe in something. And that's why someone tries to look for different kind of truth. But I don't know. It leaves me quite skeptical about all of this. It's quite ridiculous in some aspects.
I've heard people put out theories that as religion leaves, you know, the majority of mankind behind, people are slowly moving away from religion in general. They're finding they have to replace it with something. So, I mean, there is the space for Scientology. There's people that treat their diets or health regimen as a new kind of religion. What do you see as being the next thing that people basically grab onto en masse to replace what God was in their lives?
I think people should rely more on themselves. I mean, everyone has the power to do what he wants in his life, at least in our world. And I think that this must be the point. Look into yourself. Try to do something that you think is right and not just follow some different dogma from different kind of religion or ideologies just to feel safe. Because the problem is that freedom is scary because you don't know what you have to do.
True. That is very true. So tell us a little bit about some of these dates that you've got coming up across Europe. Is there anything in particular that you're excited about? Any shows with bands that you really wanted to play with?
Well, we are playing for the first time in some new countries like Macedonia, Romania, in the Eastern Europe. And usually Eastern Europe is always good for death metal. And I hope that will be some fun shows. Then we have some bigger festival, one in Norway, one is particularly good in the UK. There's a lot of band. I think there's Vader. It's quite a big show only for death metal. I think it's going to be very fun.
Awesome. That sounds excellent. 365, did you have anything that you wanted to jump in with real quick?
Yeah, I was curious about the Italian death metal scene. I think from the perspective of being from the United States, we don't hear so much about the scene as compared to like the power metal bands and the gothic metal bands that come from Italy, like Lacuna Coil, Rhapsody, Secret Sphere. What would you want us to know about Italian death metal?
Well, there's always been a good underground in extreme metal in general in Italy, but the problem is there's no labels, there's no big labels, there's not much shows. So even if there are good bands, most of them just can do the big jump in the international scene. I think we got right now Flesh God Apocalypse. They're doing a really good job. And you know, they mix the extreme metal with what is more like Rhapsody and this kind of music from Italy, and people seems to like it very much. Then we have some smaller bands. We had in the past some really good extreme metal bands like Necromass, Monumentum, but they all stopped there because there was no scene to support them.
How did you first come across extreme metal in Italy?
I remember just listening to some, you know, the most commercial metal music like Iron Maiden, Metallica, mm-hmm. and then I start delving deeper into the underground, like buying, you know, a newspaper about metal or the first webzine that were coming out in the first days of the internet. And from there, I just started knowing more about the extreme metal scene.
What was the first extreme metal band that you listened to, and you just thought, yes, this is the thing that makes sense?
Yeah. Well, I think the first band was Death.
Ah.
I think the first band I really liked, I started to play the songs with my guitar, starting to admire the game. It was a really, really good band for me.
It might just be my prejudice here or my preferences for music, but on your new record, I'm hearing a little bit of Bolt Thrower in the riffs. Is that something that you guys are into?
Giulio likes Bolt Thrower very much. I like them too, but I don't know them very well, actually. But yeah, maybe that's something Giulio listened quite a lot.
So you guys have been really, really consistent putting out new music every just couple of years or so. How have you, like, do you and Giulio feel a certain creative drive to put out music that regularly? Or is it just you put out a record when you feel like you've got the material that you need?
Well, this year we are 1 year late, so it's the first time we skip the... the dates.
You're slacking.
Yeah. Usually, we just write after the new album is out. We start writing new stuff. So we have everything ready quite soon, and the album was ready a lot of time ago. But because of the label and the release times, in the end, was due to 2016, but it skipped a year and went to 2017.
Oh, by this time, you must have another half a record written then.
No, actually, we didn't start already writing. Maybe soon, yeah.
Cool, cool. This is just something that I like to ask when we have a guitarist on the show. Would you mind just telling us a little bit about the gear that you use?
We use... I personally have a preference in a EVH-3. It's like the evolution of the 5150.
Oh.
For the ad, yeah. And Giulio right now is using a Kemper amp. The digital one?
Yeah, that's the one that can model like every amplifier.
Yeah, actually, it sounds really good. It's small, it's lightweight, and you can bring it anywhere, even on the plane. We have an endorsement with ESP. We are using... I have a... the custom made from Wade from the Whitechapel. Giulio has the Les Paul kind of ESP. Then I have another guitar that I use all live. It's handmade here in Italy, and it's really, really heavy, good woods, and I really like it.
Awesome. Is there anything that you'd like a U.S. audience to know about Italy that they might not know?
Well, if they can try it eating in Italy, it's a stereotype, but you have to try it. Probably we're not going back to burgers or this kind of stuff.
How does U.S. food compare to Italian food when you're over here?
Well... The meat is good in the U.S. It's really good. It's tasty. But apart from that, everything else, it's excessive for us. The too much flavors altogether, all very fats. We had, it was like hard to digest this kind of food for us the first days in the U.S.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yep. Yeah, it's still hard for us. Kind of,
yeah.
On the road in the U.S., did you get the opportunity to try all of the various fast foods restaurants on the side of the road?
Yeah, we tried the usual, McDonald's, Burger King, and also Taco Bell. a lot of fast food. We like the Hope House of Pancakes.
Oh, yeah.
That one was very good. The Buffalo House.
It's International House of Pancakes. It brings everybody together.
Yeah.
I hate to ask you. Did you try Pizza Hut?
Yeah, the other guys liked it, but American pizza, it's too heavy for me to eat. It's like full of fats. It's too different from what we eat here.
I think that's why we like it. It's just full of fat and salt.
Yeah.
Vocally, you manage to maintain the same kind of sound throughout your songs while cramming in a whole bunch of words. Do you do any sort of training or warm up vocally so you're able to do it live?
Well, no. I just, the good thing you need to do is to keep your voice trained. Even if it's not every day, it's important to keep it trained once in a while. If you do just some training, it's okay. You can just start and sing. At least for me, some people are starting to do this kind of warm up or something for vocal cords. But I tried. I don't feel there's really that much different, but everyone is different in their anatomy and how they sing, so it's quite a personal choice.
Awesome. Cool. Is there anything else that you would like to plug on the show today? Any information you want to get across to our listeners?
Yeah, the new album is going to be out on the 27th of January. You can just listen to some previews online. Yeah, if you like it, just support the scene, because that's the only way we can keep doing albums and play shows. It's get support from our fans.
Hell yeah. So we've included a link beneath this audio player so that you guys listening at home can pre-order this album. And everything that you need to know, you can pick up all the other records in that link below as well. So thanks so much for joining us on the show today. I think that we learned a little bit about the world.
Thank you for your help, for your support, for making the band known. Thank you.
Myself, walking like this fucking bar is like a living, I'm a freezer for you.
couple of weeks back, we asked the fine folks that listen to the show to vote on which trauma movie we would watch and discuss on this week's episode. And we both picked five different titles each. And the winner was Rock and Roll Space Patrol, a 2005 film distributed by Troma. So I assume everybody did their homework and they watched this film. Let me give a little background, because some of our listeners might be a little bit younger, or they might have better taste than you and I do, and they might not know what Troma is. So let me learn ya. Troma is the is a film studio that started in the mid-70s by two guys who wanted to make gross sex comedies for as little money as possible. And they've done pretty well with it. In the 80s, they found a huge hit with The Toxic Avenger, which I'm sure everybody under the sun is aware of. That spawned several sequels and a animated series for children, which is shocking when you consider the initial subject. Did you ever see The Toxic Avenger?
I have. I enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, it's got lots of sex, lots of violence. Definitely a hard R movie. Very silly, though. So yeah. The idea behind these films is, you know, they're gross, they're fun, they're filled with, you know, tits, and they're made as cheaply as possible. Since making these movies, they've also, Lloyd Kaufman and Michael Herz, the two guys that run the studio, they've also distributed roughly 10 billion titles from other poor filmmakers. These range in quality from things like Father's Day, which is one of the finest independent horror films I've ever seen, all the way to things like Rock and Roll Space Patrol. We didn't realize it going in, but this would be one of the lowest budget, poorest movies I've ever seen. I don't know. How about you?
It's definitely up there. It's bad. It's really, really bad.
It is less than an hour long, which is roughly 50 minutes longer than it needs to be.
But I think it's one of the positives of the movie is that it was an hour long and not an hour and a half or 2 hours.
You know, before we get into, you know, the nitty-gritty discussion of this film, I will preface by saying I watched this last night and I was extremely drunk while watching it, so I could have missed some key details.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say no.
But it's a shame, and I don't want this to color the perception of Troma too much, because there are a number of really, really great Troma movies. I mean, there's, of course, The Toxic Avenger, Tromeo and Juliet. I love The Class of Nukem High. I think that you're not as much a fan of that one.
Oh, no, I love that one. Oh,
okay. Surf Nazis Must Die.
That's the one that I'm not a big fan of. I think I just have to rewatch it.
Gotcha. And they've also, you know, they've distributed some great ones, too. Cannibal the Musical. That was Trey Parker and Matt Stone's first movie together. About Alfred Packer in the ill-fated cannibal exhibition that to the West Coast from the 1800s. It's actually a really, really well-done musical, and it's funny, and one of the best things those guys have ever done, probably aside from, I don't know, Orgasmo. This is definitely on the lower end of the spectrum. God, what a terrible movie. Rock and Roll Space Patrol, pros. Great title. That is a fantastic title.
Agreed.
It's less than an hour long. The main character, I feel like I could probably have a beer with the guy, and he seems nice enough.
A beer and a Big Mac.
A beer and a Big Mac, yeah. That's all I've got. Cons. It makes no sense.
No sense.
It was filmed on a budget of roughly 12 cents. And I'm not being flippant about this either. The special effects include like a piece of paper taped on the car dashboard to make it look like a spaceship.
The music throughout was halfway decent. I'll give them that.
I wasn't such a fan personally.
Now, here's the funny thing about the movie. It was shot in 2005, Until I saw that, I legitimately thought this movie was from the early 90s. It's so cheap looking.
And it could have been. Most of the movie is spent driving around in this guy's shitty, like, Plymouth Acclaim from, like, 1986. So
the movie starts with him driving around the mall parking lot. I mean, we see, like, Sears in the background, and I'm sure Sears is just thrilled to be included with this movie.
So, yeah, the movie opens with this, you know, portly guy who seems nice enough, who goes by the, I don't know, what the fuck was his name in this again?
Buck Fiesta. There has to be a porn star named that.
Agreed. It begins with him driving around a strip mall parking lot and pretending to talk to some kind of mission control about being on an outpost. The idea that being that this planet that he's on is actually a remote outpost from another civilization. Every single special effect here is either done with an Etch-a-Sketch or it was just chopped in from another movie, like, wholeheartedly. Did you look at any of the Amazon reviews of this?
Absolutely not.
Oh, one star is too good for it. This is truly awful. It's not even good as a bad movie. 12-year-olds could have done better. And then my favorite review is one star, no nudity. There's no nudity in this film. One short appearance by one girl that I saw. I admit I looked away frequently, so if anyone else saw nudity, please advise. I can confirm there was no nudity in this movie. The entire thing felt like a class project. Everyone in this film was into their 20s or 30s, but this was the kind of thing that me and my buddies would film when we were like 12 on a camcorder.
Yeah, it very much felt like from the ideas of a little kid, and they just put it all together.
So, I don't know, man. Like, this guy is driving around in his Plymouth Acclaim looking for a agent that's gone missing and trying to find what's happened to this outpost because everyone's brainless and complacent. So he just mainly drives around, I assume, some city in Iowa. I'm guessing it's Iowa. What do you think?
I thought it was Iowa, too.
Hey, right on. It definitely seems desolate enough to be Iowa. And that's about it, man. A couple of characters are introduced, and nothing makes sense. There's some kung fu fighting that is poorly edited. And then it just ended with some fat guy talking to the screen that wasn't even there at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say. Everything about this is just kind of weird and kind of bad. Even, like, the little promotional cover poster for it is false. I'm looking at it now. It shows Buck Fiesta and his partner, who's known as the Red Arrow, which I'm sure DC is really happy about, on the cover next to someone dressed as a police officer with an alien mask on.
This person is not in that movie.
Not in the movie at all. Holding either a laser or a bright red dildo. And he's holding a woman dressed as a cowgirl hostage. She's not in the movie either.
She is very skimpily dressed, so I think I'm understanding where that one-star Amazon review came from.
I'm looking at Troma's page now on it, and I could read the description of the movie, but I'm afraid people would think I'd be having a stroke on air.
By all means, please.
Remote planetary outposts have fallen prey to a baffling infection. I recall nothing about an infection.
No, nothing at all.
Inhabitants have resorted to mindless, rampant consumerism. Nothing about that.
Thus noted by him driving around a mall parking lot.
The galaxy's top space agent, Bronco Cedar, was sent to investigate, but now he's gone missing. As a last resort, they send Buck Fiesta, a B-list agent with an itchy trigger finger, to sort things out. Along the way, he'll enlist help from Zen Master Teleporter, the Red Arrow, who we see in the movie as wearing a t-shirt with a red arrow on it.
I didn't even notice that.
Then he looks straight out of like a 1993 grunge band, too. That's why I thought this movie was so old.
Yeah, I think that's just Iowa, man. Like, things move a little slower there.
I've spent time in Iowa, so I can confirm. So, the Red Arrow and Buck Fiesta are sent to obtain vital information from Agent Unknown and confront an army of temporal ninjas led by the sassy, evil mastermind of Icebox Fusion, Dr. Spider Jones. Armed only with the power of rock and the laser gun, Buck Fiesta will let nothing get in his way. This film is about love.
The way that rock and roll was kind of shoehorned half-assedly into this led me to believe that these guys were listening to a lot of Tenacious D, which was like current at the time, and then wanted to create something similar on their own and just missed the mark entirely.
I'm upset that not one person went up to them and said, hey, this doesn't make any sense.
Maybe it did. Maybe this is just, you know, avant-garde in a way that, like, they were playing with the expectations of the audience and released some really cutting-edge ideas into the world.
Maybe.
More accurately, my girlfriend was bummed that I put this on, and so was I.
The movie that had the second most votes was the Toxic Crusaders movie, which was an hour-long cartoon. I think we really messed up.
Okay,
want a recount.
Yeah, I remember watching that cartoon as a kid. Like, I had some of the toys. It was pretty good. Like, I would absolutely watch that again. I feel like we did Troma a disservice by watching what is probably their worst movie. I mean, I've seen
long history of bad Troma movies.
I've seen some terrible ones. Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD is a garbage-ass movie. Killer Condom is a garbage-ass movie. Killer Rednecks, or whatever the fuck that one. Garbage. There's more garbage than there is good, but this is the worst Troma movie, hands down.
It's right up there with one of my most hated movies of all time, Unspeakable, which is on Troma. So one day, if we really want to torture ourselves, we'll have to compare and contrast.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to. So, man, I don't know what to tell everybody. I'm sorry. I thought that Last Sounds of Courage would be the toughest thing to get through on this video series.
No. As stupid as that movie was, it made sense. I mean, in the alternate reality.
So we got a suggestion from one of our readers about a movie to do next that might somehow test our patience even more than those two movies combined.
Why?
Because, I mean, this is what our readers are reaching out to us, our listeners are reaching out to us about. Are you curious? Are you curious at all?
I suppose.
A little 2014 film called God's Not Dead.
Oh, no.
I'm not sure if you've ever heard the conservative fairy tale about a communist atheist professor standing up in front of a class and telling all the Christians that God is not real and something, something, evolution proves it. And then a brave U.S. Marine stands up and proves the professor wrong, leaving the entire audience, you know, wrapped in applause.
Oh, yeah. It's, wasn't it like Sergeant Todd or something called?
Marine Todd, yeah.
Marine Todd,
that
yeah.
That was the subversion of that. Yeah, so somebody made a movie based on that. college philosophy professor Mr. Radisson's curriculum is challenged by his new student, Josh, who believes God exists. And I'm glad that we can maybe dive into this one. I assume you're okay with this because, I mean, it's what the readers want, listeners want. Professor Radisson, you know, if that didn't hook you in, Professor Radisson is played by the one, the only, Kevin Sorbo. Hercules
himself.
Dean Cain is in this movie as well. This is star-studded. And I think that we can prove once and for all that higher education is filled entirely with godless communists who are corrupting our children with their atheist curriculum, and this movie will help us learn about that and learn how to fight back, because God is not dead.
Out of 33,000 votes on IMDb, this movie has a 4.9 out of 10.
So I have to assume like 30,000 of those reviews were from, you know, completely unironic Christian audiences watching this. And even they said, this isn't really that good.
15% on Rotten Tomatoes, 60% on Metacritic. I'm disappointed this movie isn't a hard R. It's PG.
Oh, bummer, man.
So no nudity, no mindless violence. And it's almost 2 hours long. Oh, my God.
Oh, I really don't want to do
this. I do like that it says drama film / comedy.
The top user review on IMDb is 1 star. This movie likely isn't for you. This is very true.
I get to pick the next movie. We need something good after this.
I don't know. I think that we're at a level now where, like, everything has to be bad.
Well, when you add these movie reviews in, the shirt stains I write, and the video breakdowns, there's not a lot of good things in my life.
You don't get to have good things. That's the thing. So what did we learn today?
We learned not to listen to our listeners and readers when it comes to picking movies.
Good call.
We learned that putting a Z at the end of your band name doesn't make you any less ridiculous when all your songs are about being a libertarian.
Really should have had an S, like a dollar sign, instead of a Z, personally.
Well, we could always make a cover band and do that.
Oh, good idea, good idea.
A backwards cover band, a backwards dollar sign.
I think that that's a good it's a good summation of the day. Everybody, please follow us on Twitter. I'm at Joe Thrashenkill. 365 is at 365 Days of Horror. We're at Toilet of Hell. Follow us on Facebook. Like, subscribe, rate, review, everything, literally everything. Put us on Yelp. I don't give a shit. And be sure to watch God's Not Dead for next week's episode so that we can all be on the same page, because, man, I got a good feeling about this movie. I feel like we're gonna really learn something that that we didn't know before.
That makes one of us.
Yeah, anything else you want to tell the people before we call it a day?
Make sure to check out Hour of Penance's new album out on Prosthetic Records, and we'll catch you next week.
Have a good one, everybody.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.